Hi, I'm Jessica Blitzer, and one thing I remember about my secondary social studies experience would probably be the way I was assessed in my history classes. Mostly, I remember the tests that I took and the amount of time I had to spend memorizing information so that I could answer the fill-in-the-blank questions. Plot things on timelines and pick the correct multiple choice question. And things have certainly changed since I was in school.
Right, big episode today. Welcome to Social Studies Connection, a podcast that brings together social studies teachers and advocates to talk about all things social studies. I'm your host, or one of your hosts, Tony Roy, President of Connecticut Council for Social Studies, and I'm always here with my good colleague Steve Armstrong. Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
The vibe isn't quite right. We're a little early today, but that's
we
okay.
We are a little early. That is for sure. Yeah. I think we'll be good though. And of course, we have Jenny Hicola Diaz. Hey, Jenny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm so glad. We had a good recording last time. The roles were reversed when we did the last one. You know, I mean, that was the one that I was being interviewed. That was a fun time.
We're recording this right toward the end of 2023. Mm. What was to you important in social studies in this year?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of important things in social studies this year. I mean, obviously, we passed the standards. That was a huge milestone. But I think that one of the things that I thought was really great about this year was the partnerships that we formed. I think Connecticut Council for the Social Studies is pretty well positioned as we're moving into 2024 with some really good partners, including Connecticut Humanities, Connecticut State Department of Ed, Connecticut Museum of Culture and History. No, but here I am. I'm talking like a president of an organization, right? I'm like, oh, let me thank all the partners. But yeah, no, I just think that that's a really, I think that makes it just like a really special time for social studies. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I think the thing, I'm getting the vibe from some district leaders and some, and this isn't necessarily social studies leaders, but like some curriculum people, coaches. They're looking forward to working with the standards, and they're looking forward to working with the model curriculum. So this is exciting to me. I'm quite frankly at the end of 2023 a bit worried about how on civics topics perhaps how we're going to teach contentious issues in the context of a 2024 election. But we'll be doing some webinars. CCSS will be sponsoring some webinars on how to deal with some.
Oh, that's good. What about you, Jenny? Any highlights from 23?
I mean, you already said them, especially the standards. I think it was really great to have the bow tied on them and have them unanimously approved and to continue the work around them.
All right, guys. Hey, this is going to be a great episode. I'm really looking forward to this. Let's go to break and let's get right into it. The Connecticut State Department of Education and Connecticut Humanities help make this podcast and the Connecticut Standards Project possible. Through leadership, curriculum, research, planning, evaluation, assessment, data analyses, and other assistance, the State Department of Education helps to ensure equal opportunity and excellence in education for all Connecticut students. And Connecticut Humanities champions the enduring value of public humanities in our lives and civil society. Through grant funding and capacity building, CTH strives to ensure the public humanities will continue to inspire storytelling, lifelong learning, inform public dialogue, and civic engagement in ways that strengthen communities and enhance quality of life for all Connecticut's residents. All right, Jenny, let's bring out our guest.
Jessica Blitzer has worked in public education for over 20 years. In her present position as the Secondary Supervisor for History and Social Studies in West Hartford, Connecticut, she supports quality teaching and learning through developing professional learning, evaluating, coaching, and developing a curriculum in which all students see themselves as history and social studies learners. In addition to her present position, Jessica consults with districts in curriculum development with an emphasis on promoting student inquiry, and has served on the writing teams for both the state social studies standards as well as the C3 religious studies companion document. She is strongly committed to equity in education and has given presentations on how districts, schools, and individual teachers can eliminate structural inequities through applying a systems thinking approach. So thank you so much for being here today, Jessica. And we'd love to have you start by thanking a teacher.
Okay. I am going to thank my a college professor from the University of Maryland, Bruce W. Brigham, who taught a course reading in the content areas. And as a history person, I never thought that I, you know, someone who was studying to be a social studies teacher, I wasn't really thinking that I was also a teacher of reading, silly me, at the time. And in one day, Dr. Brigham made it very clear why reading was so important and why teaching reading was really important. And the best part about being in class with Dr. Brigham was his emphasis on the importance of encouraging students to be independent learners by designing instruction that required students to do the heavy thinking and students to do the heavy lifting. And so thank you, Dr. Brigham, for making me excited, even more excited than I already was to become a teacher.
I would say that one of my content area reading professors at Central was probably one of the folks that really pushed me in the direction of like what a good teacher really looks like. So that's interesting that we have that connection like that. Yeah. Jess, I was hoping you might be able to tell us a little bit about, you know, why did you decide to get into teaching? I mean, you started off by talking about your college days. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, what was the impetus there?
So I didn't start off wanting to become a teacher. I actually had big plans of being an advertising executive, a copywriter, and I wanted to sell, sell products and work in the corporate world. And so use kind of a different form of, creativity. And then I was sitting down after taking a few marketing classes, I realized, I'm not sure this is the direction I want to go in. I think that's a pretty common experience of a lot of students who set off thinking they know what they want to do when they go to college. And I sat down with my advisor and he asked me where my love of history came from. And I said, what are you talking about? And he held my transcript up to my face and showed me that every elective course that I could possibly have taken or that I needed to take, I took in history and social sciences, mostly history classes, from the pretty generic classes to the really obscure classes. And it was that question that made me say, I really love history. So I had to do a little soul searching, figure out what I wanted to do with that love of history since I wasn't going to be a marketing major anymore. Or an advertising exec, but I guess now I sell history to kids. So it's the same sort of skill set, minus the statistical analysis, although more and more we use data to make instructional decisions. But that's how I stumbled upon it. And one of my first classes was with Dr. Brigham. And he shifted, I talked in my intro about my experience and what kind of learning I did and how I was assessed. And I think Dr. Brigham opened my eyes that learning could be something very different from the way I experienced it. So same skill set, I guess, different application.
So you went from Dr. Brigham over to Steve Armstrong. How long did you work with Steve Armstrong? How long until you're in your career did you get to work with Steve? What might be a funny quirk about Steve that most folks don't know unless you work with him? We need to know a little bit more information about Steve Armstrong.
So the listeners don't have the opportunity to view Steve's face, but right now he just perked up a little bit wondering what I will tell. and actually, I'm going to make it a lovely story about Steve. So I started working in West Hartford in 2007. Yeah, it would be 2007. I should know that because that is the year my daughter was born. And so I started my job and I was pregnant with my daughter. And Steve was my colleague in West Hartford, my other social studies department supervisor colleague. And I remember being home on maternity leave. And I think it was a day or two before, or maybe a week before I was supposed to return. And Steve came over to my house to sit with me right before we were going into personnel review. So, and sat down with me and said, "Oh, hey, by the way, how can I help you?" Because I was going to return. And the very next day or 2 days later, I was going to have to sit in a personnel review, several personnel review meetings. And me with my infant and Steve in my basement, I think we were sitting in my basement, and he was helping me get ready to transition back to work. So it was really helpful to have a colleague who was kind of looking out for my best interest and setting me up for success.
Jessica, could I ask you from that, how about from that period of time till today, how has being a supervisor, how about this, how has social studies changed and the instruction just in the time, not going back to when you were a student or something, but in the time you've been in West Hartford, how has social studies changed?
So there was a little thing called the Common Core that that came out, that for the first time we saw social studies actually mentioned, right? We saw standards from at the national level that related to social studies, clearly social studies and literacy. So again, thank you, Dr. Brigham. So we saw that come out. And then we saw our national standards come out. So we started to see a shift away from sort of what I experienced as a student and more towards inquiry, right? Putting students in the role of historians. And I think that's been the single significant shift in terms of the how we teach history and what we the cognitive tasks that we ask students to engage in. And I think the C3 really shifted changes in social studies. And I'll throw one more thing in there too, the teacher evaluation system, right? And asking teachers to collect data on their practice, right? On student achievement data. That coupled with, you know, C3 inquiry standards really forced us to think about assessment and student growth, right? How are we going to measure student growth in our classes over time? Because it was tied to teacher evaluation. And we had this great document that said, you know, our charge is inquiry. Our charge is historical thinking skills. Our charge is inquiry literacy, right? So I think those are the biggest shifts. And I think they're exciting because it elevates the nature of our discipline, right? But I also think it presents a lot of challenges for us for a whole host of reasons, which I imagine we'll talk about today.
I hear you talking about elevating the discipline, which is something we talk about a lot on this podcast. And one of the big things that folks are always talking about is, you know, social studies is not assessed. So it makes it almost like, you know, not as serious, I guess is the best way to say it, or not taken as seriously. So maybe you could tell me a little bit about what is it like for someone that's in your position that's trying to coach teachers on how to do the best they can do with an academic discipline that doesn't have a state assessment? And then follow-up question would be, do we need a state assessment for social studies? And if so, what should it look like? Just kidding about the last part. Just do the first two parts.
You're going to let me design it?
Yes, I'm in. You get to design it. Yeah.
I'm in. If I get to design it, I'm in. I got a few more people I'd like to pull on my committee. We could talk about that after. go back to make sure I have the questions correctly because there's a lot in there that you just asked me. The first piece of it was, what are some of the challenges and how do we navigate those? Did I get that? Is that correct? Okay. So it's really interesting, you know, kind of in preparing for this conversation today, I just went and reviewed some of the things I'd looked at in the past. And both are, you know, two of our neighbors, right, have state assessments. So we have the Regents in New York. They're, you know, they that assesses history and social studies content, and the MCAS, not sure if that's exactly, but the Massachusetts Comprehensive Assessment Exam, right, has a civics component to it, right, based on their history and social science framework. And so it's interesting, and both are rigorous frameworks, right? They have similar content based on inquiry, based on C3, but we don't. So I look at it, two things are true at the same time. I'll say that. A test gives direction and certainly helps when you're designing your curriculum and you're thinking about instruction, knowing what the end result is going to be or needs to be can be very, very helpful, right? But if that end result doesn't reflect what we've stated in our standards, I think it becomes really challenging because it creates a conflict, right? And so we have this, you know, there's an interesting rub there. But so we do have standards, but we don't have a state assessment, which then leaves us with the question of how are we going to assess all of these standards? And what are those assessments going to look like? And we have to be able to answer the question, what does it mean to assess inquiry? If inquiry is the approach, what does that mean to assess inquiry? What does that look like? And I think you know, in West Hartford, we are revising our curriculum to include the new social studies content standards and the inquiry standards, and we're really thinking about that. And you asked sort of how I lead my work and what advice I give, and the way we're doing this is really looking at how inquiry and content intersect with one another. And if you do a careful read of a thoughtful read of the new Connecticut standards, you start to see these connections everywhere, right? And rather than assessing kind of these, and they can be assessed both discreetly, so you can assess an individual standard and student progress toward meeting an individual standard, but you can also address the standards in tandem and sort of as a group. And so we're in the process of thinking about what are some of the ways we're going to measure student progress and what are some of the formative ways we're going to measure student progress? And then how are we going to design unit assessments that allow students to demonstrate what they know and they can do? It's not fill in the blank you know, rote knowledge, because I forget who said it and I apologize, but maybe there's been several people who've said it. But if we're focusing on that, you know, I think Google it is the best. You know, if you can Google it, then do you need to know it? And the bigger question for us is, why do we want kids to have knowledge? Why do we want them to seek information? And what do we want them to do with the knowledge that they have? And so that's what we're focusing on now.
Jessica, could I ask you a follow-up? And again, not going too far deeply and not going way down into this, but a lot of people ask the question when, like, I do a workshop on inquiry or something, how do we assess this? How do we assess? We get it. We get how to create inquiry and all this. What would be an answer that you would give them?
So I would take a look at what I think you have to really understand what it is that we're asking students to do with inquiry, right? And the C3 actually, if you go back to the C3 document, the C3 framework, there's actually a list of inquiry literacies. And I think looking at those inquiry literacies, so I'll name a few of them because I have the luxury of staring at my screen right now, but people are listening. So things like questioning, selecting sources, gathering information, evaluating sources, right? For, you know, their reliability, credibility, making claims, using evidence, constructing arguments, presenting arguments, assessing different options, right? To address a global issue, or, and then, you know, obviously we have the taking informed action piece, but there are all these inquiry literacies. And so what we focus on is instruction is the focus of our instruction is on helping students develop the skills in the presence of content so that they can demonstrate the ability to use these skills independent of us. And so when we're designing assessment, we're always thinking about instruction. So I think since I'm likely speaking to social studies teachers broadly, I think the DBQ is sort of the thing we always think about. And I can talk about a few other ways, but a lot of our standards tend to drive us to the DBQ, that written document. In the presence of a compelling question, let's take a look at a variety of source material. Let's gather the information from that material. And then let's construct an argument using that source material in response to a particular question.
For folks that don't know, DBQ is document-based questions.
And that often results in a student's written response, right? So we think the essay response to a question, but there are a lot of skills. And so the document-based question is really a great way to assess students' ability to demonstrate a lot of these skills as long as we are providing the instruction along the way, right? So if we know in the end we want students to use a set of documents or source material to respond to a prompt in writing, then we need to think about, what's the skill set that we need to instruct in order for a student to be able to do that independently. What we tend to see a lot of is, okay, student written responses. I love writing. It's an incredibly important skill. It's a great opportunity for students to articulate their thinking, but it isn't the only way for students to articulate their thinking and their understanding. And so I think where any assessment we devise is really an opportunity for us to see the product of student thinking. That's what we're getting at. That to me is what it means to assess inquiry. Where did that student end up in the presence of the content in the material or the question in the materials that they were given? And so, and there are lots of other ways, which, but I'll let you give them.
Thank you.
What I hear you saying is that the best way to assess inquiry is to kind of narrow in on exactly what the skills of inquiry are and build that into your instruction, but also into your assessment to make sure that students are having opportunity to develop these questions, having opportunity to select the sources, having opportunity to develop claims and support them with the evidence. So like actually kind of going through that academic inquiry process of like working through a problem, so to speak, and then showing what you know at the other end. That's what it sounds like to me. And is that how you would align instruction to assessment? So like, how do you teach that? How would you teach that maybe?
Starting with the end, right? So knowing where you're going, I guess you sort of, if you want to talk about the backward design model, I think is really what, many people who are curriculum designers are familiar with backward design model. So but backward design has I almost want to call it bookend design, right? Because you have to start at the beginning. And the table of, I guess, the table of contents in our book are our standards, right? So when you're determining what your assessment is going to look like, you have to take a look at what are the standards that we want to make sure. Standards are for students to meet, right? They're not a checklist for us to move through content. Like it, if you're checking off standards saying, yes, I did that. Yes, I did that. Or yes, I taught that today. We're missing the mark, right? Standards are written for students. What students need to know, what students should be able to do. So always identifying and being really clear about the standards and then being thoughtful about how your assessment is going to measure those particular standards. So you may not in a, I mean, we'll stick with our document-based question. So in that DBQ, you may not necessarily assess every single skill depending on what standards you're focusing on in a particular unit. Maybe in a sixth grade classroom, you're really just working on students developing, using source material to developing claim, or even just selecting sources. Like the skill we may be working on is what sources would help us best answer the question of, you know, how maps show, I'm trying to think of I was trying to go through the standards and I wish I had the language of the standard right in my head, but I don't, they're still new. but if you're asking them to really think about how a map, maps represent the perspective of the map maker, right? There's a standard that kind of, that addresses that. So I might ask students to say, all right, let's, for this DBQ, I really want you, here's a question we're trying to answer, and maybe I give it to them, or maybe we've created a bunch of questions as a class, and say, which are the maps that would best help us to find some maps that are going to help us answer those questions, and let's dig in to what's the perspective on these maps, right? Like, which ones are going to be better to help us out, or what might be, where might we see the map maker's bias here? You know, so why might we not want to use that particular map, or how might we want to use that map? So maybe if I'm assessing in that unit, I'm just asking them to pull the source material or select the source material. I think too often we think that assessment is always about a giant project or the full paper in the end. And I think sometimes it's just saying, okay, let's, in the knowing what you're doing in that unit, we're going to answer that question, but we're just going to select our maps, right? What maps are going to help us answer those questions? Or even, you know, I'm working with my colleague right now on an assessment for I'll stay in sixth grade for a moment, where we're asking students to create a, the assessment is not a DBQ, but the assessment is in keeping with the standards, creating a map of our community for a particular purpose. So the students will select the purpose for the map they want to create, and they will communicate by designing a map that includes at least one human and one physical characteristic of importance, and they will find source material on that, and we'll give them some, and they'll find other sources, and they will create this map. And one of the questions that we want them to consider in the creation of their map is why they chose those characteristics. What would this map tell someone who is not from our town, right? And really, how did their experience or point of view influence the decisions they made in producing their map? So one of the examples would be, you know, if I'm trying to show, if maybe I choose to show where churches are in my community, because I value that, right? I value my religious experience, my religious upbringing, and I want my map to show where all of the churches are located in West Hartford. So the question we want kids to consider, why not other houses of worship, Right. So how does your perspective influence? So I think I kind of veered off sort of the primary question you were asking, and just say, like, it's not just DBQs that we can use, but you have to start with what are the standards you're trying to assess, and designing an assessment that measures those standards, and then being really clear about what are the skills students need to develop. So in that case, students would need to learn how to actually make a map, right? We'd have to teach them that skill.
Yeah.
How are maps made? So you have to build those pieces in. We're going to have them look and read a lot of maps. And there's a lot of standards around how to read maps and how to, you know, detect perspective in maps, and what are human and physical characteristics. So we've identified very clearly what the standards are we're assessing, and we've designed an assessment. And throughout the unit, as we're teaching these individual skills, we'll give students opportunities to practice, to give feedback, to revise their work, revise their thinking, consider alternate perspectives, and practice those skills before they demonstrate independently what they can do. So I think I kind of meandered through that one.
No, I like that. I like how you're saying about the bookend, because recently I was planning a unit, a project, if you will. And, you know, I started with the end in mind. I picked out all my standards, and then I made my rubric. And as I was going through and trying to build my lessons to get the students to be able to do the thing at the end of the rubric, I realized I didn't have enough time to meet all of the standards that I thought I was going to meet. So then I had to figure out, well, how is it that we shed things to make sure that we keep the heart of what we're trying to do? But, yeah. You know, it takes time to teach to these standards. You know
of mean? Course not, it does.
Yeah, it doesn't. You don't just say, oh, here's the project, go ahead and do it. Like, you got to actually like show the kids what you're talking about, or you have to show the students, you know, how is it that I can look at government through the lens of a particular issue and determine, you know, the strategies that it takes to affect change. Like, that's actually really hard to do. And, you know, one thing I love working with you on, Jessica, is the standards. Like, years ago, 10 years ago, or whatever it was now, 8 years ago, let's say, you know, we were working on the frameworks together. I remember going to your house, and you were really the person that introduced me to, like, okay, here's what a standard is, and this is what it does, and this is why we have to take them very seriously, and the language has to be very specific. And I was hoping that you might be able to tell us a little bit about your experience this time, because, you know, we're all here for the standards project. You know, we've been working on it for a long time. Oh, you just heard the plug there, the sting, if you will. What was it like for your experience this time around, maybe even compared to our last time around when we were working on the frameworks?
So I had a different role this time than I did when we were with the frameworks. Although I'll get back to this. I know I can veer a little bit. I just want to say one thing about...
We trust you.
Thanks. I appreciate that. One thing that you mentioned about, you know, we design big, right? We're social studies people design big. We love kids to think like historians. We want them to see nuance. We want them to recognize complexity, right? We're past the time where we're asking them to memorize the answers, because I think we ourselves have realized that it's too complex to have one answer to big questions in history, right? And so it's less about, you know, did I get it right, as to what was my thinking and how did I arrive at this conclusion and what sources did I use? But what you're bringing up is something that when I'm talking to teachers, I call it the hidden skill set. So even just with questioning, you know, I think most of our students, even our youngest learners, social studies learners, they come in and they know what a question is. Of course they do. They ask tons of them. But what it means to question and how to learn how to ask questions is a skill set. And so we have to get really good at recognizing some of the hidden skill set in the tasks that we're asking kids to engage in. Right. And so when you have standards that are heavy and weighty standards, there's a lot of thinking skills that are required that are not listed. So what does it mean to select selecting sources on the surface seems like, yeah, go and find sources. But there's a lot of skills kind of hidden in each of those things that we have to be very thoughtful about building into if not our curriculum directly, then building it into our instructional practice, because then we set kids up for not being able to do the things that they would be able to do, like demonstrate good quality thinking, because they're tripping up on some skills that we missed in our instruction. So you made me think of that point. But my experience with the standards, I had a different role this time. So I was not an author of the standards as I was and when we were sitting down at my kitchen table in my dining room table in the frameworks project.
One of my favorite experiences of my whole career.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. Yes. Pre-COVID, before Zoom. Way pre-COVID, right? When we sat down at a table and looked at each other with papers all over the table. So in this case, I was a reviewer. And so I had a very different lens. And I liked them. I liked both experiences for what they were. I think at this point in my career, because so much of what I do teach a class, but I also do a lot of supervising of instructional practice. And I think where I am in my career and sort of how I spend the majority of my day, this was a really good fit for me, kind of having that secondary lens on it, being able to look at the work and viewing the decisions that people were making and kind of thinking about less about, you know, oh, I wouldn't have made that decision or why did they do, but really asking like, what was the thinking involved in that? So it was a very different experience not being in the room, but being a receiver of the product of what people created who were writing them. It was interesting to see what people thought was important. It was really, it sort of opened my eyes to what's happening in all the other places, because their standards writing are consensus documents, right? So what do we believe collectively in our state is important and worthwhile and really valuable? You know, it's in some ways it's a statement. It's a mission statement, right? It's a value statement. It's what we believe that kids need to know and be able to do, and what social studies learning is going to look like. So it was really a cool experience to kind of view that. And so I came in with a critical friend, not necessarily a critical lens. So it wasn't like I was critical of the work, but my job was to do a lot of paring down and seeing where there were redundancies. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that part of the work. And then, you know, I always think about what does this look like? And I think everyone who was doing some of the review was, what does this look like when it hits a classroom? Right? What does it look like when we have to assess these standards? What does it look like when we have to instruct to prep students for an assessment? Well-written assessments are the key to great instructional practices. I believe that.
I agree with that.
I love assessment because designed well, it really forces you to think about how you're preparing students to be successful on something that should matter to us, right? A poor assessment would lead to poor instructional practice.
Jessica, if I could pull you from curriculum just for two questions.
Sure.
Question one, probably perhaps an unanswerable one, but in Connecticut and in other states, there is an apparent shortage of reliable candidates for many social studies positions. I mean, I don't know if that's the case in West Hartford, but I've talked to people who say, wow, we used to get, you know, 300 people applying for a job, now we get 7. Is there a way, I mean, if you were working in a teacher ed program or at a university, how do we encourage young folks to get it? And what's stopping young folks to being involved in the profession, and how could perhaps we reverse that?
So I don't think clearly I don't have all the answers. You're right. No, I don't think it's necessarily.
Answerable question. I'd just be interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I do have a thought. I don't think it's that people aren't necessarily attracted, although, you know, it hasn't, you know, we were heroes during when we were all teaching from our basements. What it means to be in education ebbs and flows, and public perception of what this job is and people's own experience. I think all of that kind of factors in, and that's a larger national conversation, I think. But I do think that there is something, and I thought about this for a while, you know, and since, and I will tie it to assessment, not because it's all I talk about, but it is a lot of what I talk about and what I'm interested in. You know, it's funny, I'm talking a lot about how we want kids to think like historians. And then I think about, you know, the shifts in teacher preparation programs and wanting teachers to, you know, and really we have some strong partnerships with universities in the state. And I think we're seeing shifts in teacher preparation programs, particularly social studies education programs. So I think there's real progress in that area. But what's one of the gatekeepers for getting your certification? The social studies praxis. And what is the praxis? It is a rote, it's a test of rote knowledge. And so I really think that, you know, when I think about myself, and I don't really remember, right? I have little bits and pieces about my, you know, my first few years teaching, right? Which was a wonderful experience. I started at Windsor High School, and it couldn't have been a better place for me to land with more supportive colleagues. But the amount I learned about the content I was teaching, the depth of the content I was teaching, the strategies I was using when I had students sitting in front of me who needed instruction, and most of my learning, the best learning I've done, has been kind of in the job. And I really think that there are some barriers for students, for prospective teachers, around the praxis, having to pass that test, which is not something that we want to, it's not the way we would want to assess our own students, our own history students. So it's an interesting sort of gatekeeper tool. And I wonder how many students don't pass it, just more of a wonder. And I wonder how many times they have to take it. Obviously, we want students who have knowledge of history and of social sciences. It's important to understand the discipline that you're teaching, but I think there may be other ways to assess prospective teachers. And so I'm not sure a knowledge test is the way to go. And when we look at who does well on that and who does not, I think there might be something maybe we need to rethink. I haven't looked into it deeply, but you asked the question and it's sort of been on my mind. What is that test? Measuring, does that test hurt or push away some candidates who'd be really great teachers?
My other question is, what would, and I can absolutely assure you they exist in Connecticut, what would you say to a teacher who would say, I'm afraid to teach controversial issues, I'm afraid to teach about the elections, I don't want to get into trouble? So I'm just going to back off on those topics. What would you say to that teacher?
I would say, the first thing I would say was that I understand. The second thing I would say is, the first thing I would say is tell me more, right? Tell me more. Was it something that happened? Is this, I would want to get context for where this is coming from. But the biggest thing I would say, and I actually do say this to my own staff, is, you know, the standards require us to teach about elections, right? The standards require us to engage with students around civics and government and U.S. history, right? So you can't choose to not address something that our standards are telling us in the state of Connecticut. I think we're the standards are really the place to go. Like, let's look at what the standard is asking us to do, right? Where is your fear? Are you afraid you're going to say something inflammatory? Don't say something inflammatory. let's look at what the standards are asking us to do. But I acknowledge that, you know, we don't get to decide how someone else interprets, you know, what's being said in a classroom. You know, and as the teacher in that learning space, things said by students can sometimes get attributed to you as a teacher, even if they're not said by you. And so I think, you know, having a clear purpose for why we're talking about what we're talking about. And again, the standards provide that purpose. What are the learning outcomes for kids? And why are we engaging in this discussion today? So really knowing the standards, having clear objectives, and recognizing that students are going to bring things into the classroom and they're going to be asking questions, which they should. Right. These are spaces for conversation. But, you know, if you're, you know, talking about an election or you're talking about something, I won't say election, if you're talking about something controversial in a unit where it doesn't fit and there is no standard that's addressing that, then I would ask why. Right. So what are we trying to do with students? And what we're trying to do is get them to think critically. We're not trying to tell them what to think. We're trying to teach them what are the tools that historians, social scientists, geographers, psychologists, what are the tools that they use to try to answer big questions in their disciplines? And some of those big questions are controversial questions. That's why they're compelling questions, because they're worth asking. They make us curious. And so, you know, I get that fear. I worry sometimes we may opt out of something, of a learning experience that we can provide for students, based on fear of something that may never manifest. And I think there are ways of navigating that. And that's why I think standards, and particularly our content standards, with those EGs that are really helpful, are giving us the direction to engage with students around all sorts of topics.
That's great. Thank you so much. No, awesome. Thank you. We're actually going to start to wrap up here. So we're going to go into final thoughts. You know, let's start with Jenny. We haven't heard much from Jenny today. Let's hear her final thought.
I'm just thankful for this conversation, because I'm thinking a lot about assessment as I work with different districts and teachers, and just how much more time teachers deserve to really spend with the standards than they're getting. So I'm appreciative of this conversation, because it's definitely making me think about what I'm planning with someone PD, whether it's for the entire secondary social studies staff in a district or at a particular school, how much more time they should be committing to that work with teachers.
Great. Steve?
I oftentimes talk in hyperbole, but I will not talk in hyperbole here. I just want to say I've enjoyed talking and with Jessica today, and I would say in terms, and I'm not speaking in any way dishonestly here, but in people that I've worked with on curricular issues, on how to teach kids, on how to develop activities that help kids learn, that for me, Jessica's a real smart person in that, and is worth listening to. And Jessica, you were mentioning about when we talked about something, but I also said, and I mean this with sincerity, that I learned a lot from you and we were working together too. So it's always a pleasure.
My final thought has to do with being purposeful. I think that that's one of the core takeaways from this discussion, but it's also one of the things that is core to my own practice. I think every day when you walk in, you need to know exactly where you're trying to end up by, certainly by the end of the period or the block, if you will, but definitely by the end of the week and certainly by the end of the unit. So usually everything should build upon itself. And I think that that's how you can make sure you don't step in it, right? If you know exactly where you're going and you have the roadmap, sometimes you make your own map, but if you're following that, you can do well. And Jessica, you get the final thought.
So you were hoping I would say this final thought, that this was, that I'd be happy to do more podcasts. No, this is a fun conversation for me. Dave threw me a couple of questions I wasn't expecting. So thanks, because you make me think about, make me recommit to things or rethink, right? When you're challenged, when you get a challenging question. And so, I guess the final thought I would like to share, and my request for anyone who might be listening to this, was, we want to make sure that we're measuring that any assessment we design, we want to measure student thinking. And the coolest part about designing assessments that measure student thinking is that it makes the instruction and the path to get there so much more enjoyable when you're teaching your classes in that way. So design great assessments and design them with your colleagues, because that's when they're the best.
Okay, what a great episode. Great job today. See, it wasn't as painless, right, Jessica?
Sure.
Maybe not. For all those folks out there listening, take some time to visit ctsocialstudies.org and sign up to become a member. We cannot promote social studies without your support. Thank you.